time for The Outspoken Cyclist, the weekly conversation about cycles, cyclists, travel, trails, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. WJCU broadcasts and streams The Outspoken Cyclist on-air show at 8 a.m. every Saturday morning. In Northeast Ohio, tune in to 88.7 FM, or worldwide, listen in at wjcu.org. Our weekly podcast is available at the close of the on-air show at outspokencyclist.com, or download it with your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for February 20th, 2021. As we look at mounds of snow and feel the biting wind here in Northeast Ohio, we're looking forward to warmer weather and to getting outside to ride. For those who already have miles for January and February, well, this is a family show, so I just won't say what I'm thinking. Just know that we are quite envious. One really exciting thing to happen this past week was the landing of the Perseverance rover on Mars. I am still always intrigued and excited about NASA's work. And while watching the landing on the NASA channel, I was really heartened to hear the questions from youngsters about the launch, from what the wheels were made of to how long it takes for communications to reach Earth from Mars. So our last item of business before we get to our conversations this week is Radiothon. I'd like to thank everyone who has donated to the WJCU annual fundraising event. And if you're hearing this on Saturday, February 20th or Sunday, February 21st, you still have time to log on to WJCU and make a pledge. Go to WJCU.org, fill out the simple form, and you'll be helping us to reach our goal for 2021. Anyway, we have a show to do here, and we have two very interesting conversations. The first is with Brent Baber. Now, I believe I may have mispronounced his surname during our conversation, and I want to apologize in advance if I did. While I like to not make mistakes like that, I think you will appreciate our conversation and the work that he does regardless. Brent founded the Bicycle Film Festival in 2000. Yep, and 2020 was to be the 20th anniversary of the wildly popular event. But we all know what happened in 2020, and there was some question as to whether it was time to just let the Bicycle Film Festival go. That did not happen, and Brent gives us the history, the scope, and the future of the BFF in a moment. Our second conversation is with two gentlemen, Jason Huntsman and Aaron Frank, both with the e-bike brand Serial One. Now, we don't usually do in-depth bike reviews on the show, but we do talk about e-bikes, and when Harley-Davidson decided to lend their engineering and know-how to produce pedal-powered machines, I thought it was worthy of a conversation. Jason and Aaron will be with me in the second half of the show. So have you been spending an inordinate amount of time in front of your television screening The Queen's Gambit or Bridgerton or The Crown or any number of other shows or films as you socially distance yourself and try to find outlets for what seem to be endless hours without human interaction? Well, how about combining our sport, cycling, and film, and the arts, and your community? And now all of it is available online. Nothing brings community together like a mutually exciting and informative event, especially when it involves cycling, music, film, and fun. The Bicycle Film Festival, which in its 20 years has attracted a million people to its venues all over the world, found itself looking at canceling the 2020 event and wondering whether it was time to just call it as everything began to shut down due to the pandemic. But calls started coming in from cities, organizations, and potential sponsors to find a way to keep bringing the music, the films, the art, and the people together. Hello, Brent. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today. How's New York?
Thank you. I'm happy to be here in New York. We're a tough, strong city. Obviously, that we've been through a lot, and I have been here for the whole time during COVID. I haven't left, and I'm seeing my neighbors. I live downtown in Manhattan, and a lot of people are keeping their spirit high. And it's a tough time, but it also regarding cycling, oh my gosh, cycling is huge. It's grown so much. It's a wonderful thing to see.
We look to New York a lot on this show, and we've been, I mean, even back in the days of your transportation czar, Jeanette Sadiq Khan, I mean, we've always been talking about New York. So when I want to see what's going to happen going west, I look to you guys because it hasn't happened here probably.
We have a big voice, I guess.
And you do a lot of things. So I want to talk about your story and about the Bicycle Film Festival. Let's start with the beginning. What happened to you and how did that inspire the Bicycle Film Festival?
First off, I'm an American. I'm a rare breed. I started off with BMX and then got into road cycling, dabbled a little bit in mountain biking. I was one of the few people in high school that was really excited that Greg LeMond had won the Tour de France. And then shortly thereafter, one of my first roommates as a young man was a bike messenger. I loved all the different cultures of cycling. I just was really passionate and still am. And then in New York, about over 20 years ago, I was riding my bike and I was doored into an oncoming bus. I'm okay and I was fine. About 6 months of rehabilitation gave me time to think about, you know, life in general and like what I was going to do about this. I really wanted to let people know how wonderful cycling is. And I, as a victim of this bus or this crash, I really started, you know, I talk about it a lot and a lot of people were accused me like, that's your fault for riding in New York or were you wearing a helmet or, you know, come on, you're stupid. You know, and I had been in a car crash on the Bay Bridge in San Francisco where actually it was less damaging to my body. The ambulance came for that one. And the way people treated me when they heard about that was a lot different. So I said, what is it about cycling that people, especially 20 years ago, that people kind of give a stigma to the cyclists. And I said, they don't understand. I mean, I want them to see how beautiful and wonderful the life around cycling is. And so I thought, what better way to do that than share on the big screen with films? Let's have art exhibitions. Let's have parties. Let's bring a community together of people who are like-minded and folks who aren't really into it. And that was the beginning of the Bicycle Film Festival. Our first year, we had sold out shows and I was really surprised that many people would come. We did a 5-day event. Anthology Film Archives, which is like a temple of film here in New York. Jonas Mekas, who is a legendary female filmmaker, at that time he was in his 70s, helped me start the festival. And so from there, I never planned on doing it again, but there was so much enthusiasm for this event and it brought all kinds of different people together. We had valet bicycle parking out front, which at that time was not a very common thing. You know, valet parking exists at sports stadiums, like in San Francisco, the San Francisco Giants has bike parking, you know, so we've come a long way in that time. I never planned on doing it again. And then since there, I'm now talking to you after doing it for over 20 years. You know, we've been all around the world at this physical event with concerts, with video art related to bikes, you know, at the Sydney Opera House. We've been to Moscow, South Africa, Buenos Aires. I can keep going. It's so much fun to think about, you know, Shanghai and Tokyo and Mexico City. The parties, you know, there were always really good. And then all around Europe and the United States and Canada. So, yeah, I feel like a really lucky guy. I've been traveling until COVID about 7 months of the year, meeting some of the most wonderful people, artists, filmmakers, and cyclists. And many times that crosses over. Yeah, so that's kind of the origin story of Bicycle Film Festival.
Wow. What a great story. Great story. Let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Brent Barber. He is the founding director of the Bicycle Film Festival, and I have no idea why I did not know about this sooner. I mean, you would think I know about all this stuff, and this is new to me, but it looks like such an interesting production. So talk about how music and art are integrated into the festival and also how you find your venues. How do you go about deciding where you're going to hold one of these?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, when we go to the cities, oftentimes it depends on budget. Also, we're invited, like for example, the Sydney Opera House invited. We had already done the festival a number of times in Sydney, but they wanted the Bicycle Film Festival to be a part of their programming. And it was very likely because we'd been at some kind of other established prestigious venues. For example, the Barbican in London, which is like the Queen's place for the London Symphony Orchestra. I think it's very interesting because we spend a lot of work on figuring out how to do, venues and how do we work with the budgets that we have. For example, we have done a program with, maybe your audience is familiar with, A Sunday in Hell, which is, I consider, one of the greatest cycling films ever, about the Paris-Roubaix in 1976. Anyhow, Jorgen Lepp, the director of that, has made three great classic cycling films in the 70s. So we got together with a band, Blonde Redhead, really internationally renowned, and we put together, with the help of Michael Leonard, who is the kind of go-to guy if you want strings and horns with your contemporary music. It's like, he works with Brian Eno, and he's done stuff with Yoko Ono and David Byrne too, and a number of great artists, and Blonde Redhead. So we work with him, and we've created, a lot of people give a lot to Bicycle Film Festival and the bicycle community in general. It's amazing. So we've created this score with permission of the director. We've adapted A Sunday in Hell to this incredible music and chamber ensemble of strings and horns, and we put that in a church. So we got permission of some churches here in New York, and we even have a bar at the church, serving wine. I think it's a lot about the venues integrate into the festival through community, really. So we could be at, like I said, major established, world-renowned places, or like, for example, during times that some cities may not have as big of a budget, we ask the old Adidas store if we could use their space to create a gallery out of it. We go in and paint the old retail store and then bring in the art, or we work with galleries, blue chip galleries in Chelsea to help curate and exhibit some amazing bicycle art.
So I'll bet you know Talia Lempert, don't you?
Yes. It was in the first art exhibition at Bicycle Film Festival.
She's awesome. I love her work.
Yeah, so she's amazing.
You talk about we. Who is we? Who are we?
Well, I like to use that pronoun because I couldn't do this alone.
Right.
But, it's interesting when you talk, there's all kinds of we's involved in Bicycle Film Festival. But what I learned from the first year, there was Jonas Makis, this man I mentioned before, and a number of people who were my senior, said, if you want to make this successful, be inclusive. And that means a lot of different things. And that right now, when we talk about inclusive, there's a lot of, racial issues and social justice issues that have come to the fore. And I think that's something that before Black Lives Matter came around, we were already amongst our team saying we must be inclusive. And then frankly, being based in New York City, it makes it a little bit easier because these people are within our friend groups and our community. And I'm really proud of the community here for that. Another we is that bicycling, when it is on the city riding side, you would be thrilled to find out how many great artists and creative people are into cycling. And let's say still into the United States to this day, if you are riding a bike in your city today, or even more so 20 years ago, you're probably adventurous, probably think a little bit differently. And you're creative in how you're living your life compared to what the rest of the country is doing. So that oftentimes is an artist or a musician or a filmmaker. So we've been fortunate to work with, many people that are established. I mean, we sometimes like to say we've had, I think it's 8 Academy Awards of people who have had films at the Bicycle Film Festival. So we've been doing it that long where people's careers have like really flourished since they had their film at the Bicycle Film Festival. Something that people may not know is that it is titled Bicycle Film Festival, but if you go to the Bicycle Film Festival, we have an opening night reception with a panel discussion or women in cycling, women in equality, equal pay, or what have you. And last year, it wasn't a panel discussion. It was actually a presentation by the president of Columbus Tubing, Antonio Colombo, who came out to celebrate 100 years of Columbus Tubing. He prepared a slideshow, and that was wonderful because a lot of frame builders came, bike messengers were there, designers, because Columbus Tubing was a big part of like the Bauhaus movement and furniture design. So it was I love mixing it up in that way. And then we're still on opening night. On Wednesday night, usually we have a big gala dinner or a barbecue, depends. And lately we've been doing opening it up, having a big vegan barbecue. And that's hugely popular with the youth culture. And then Thursday we have an art exhibition opening, which is another very well attended. And we're very, this is a strength of ours. We have a lot of visual artists really do a lot for us and participate in these exhibitions, from sculptures, photos, paintings, all related to biking, including Talia Lempert over the years here and there. And then Friday we have the music. I mentioned, like, one of my favorite things about the Bicycle Film Festival is like having bands play and to video art or a film, scoring a cycling film. We've done that all around the world. And then, you know, of course we have movies. We haven't even talked about the movies.
Right. Wait, there's a film festival. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the weekend we have films. What's really popular at Bicycle Film Festival are the short films. If you go to the short film program, you may not know what's playing, but you're probably going to like a lot of them, and some you may not like. You may be more into road cycling, but you know, you may really appreciate some of the stories that are told, and you know, you begin to relate with other cyclists. You know, maybe that BMX movie really touched you. So that's an opportunity for us to bring a lot of different people together and kind of unite us as cyclists. But of course, we always have like a great cycling film played at the festival every year. We have adventure and bike packing and all kinds of different subject matters. We have Motherlode. You know, Motherlode, when we talk about this pronoun, we really work hard to get films about women and by women at the festival, which we need more women cycling. You know, if we want cycling to grow, we need to really find a place for them to make films and participate in all the different ways. You know, that's what we've been doing. And the films, you know, which really, we have a privilege with our programming. Like, we're not held down like a big Sundance or New York Film Festival or a Cannes, where we can take a film that's made by a high school student that the story is so important or amazing or relevant that we can accept that film. The production value is not $100,000, you know, or we can take a film that has $100,000 production value with amazing actors that are well known, and we put those films together and we create a story and kind of create a palette of the cycling experience with those stories. And I think that honestly, the programming, the curating, the artists who participate obviously are what keeps us going for 20 years.
Wow. I'm going to reintroduce you one more time. We're speaking with Brent Barber. He's the founding director of Bicycle Film Festival. We'll give you all the information to find out what's going on now and what's been going on in the past and what might be going on in the future. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Brent some more. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
The Outspoken Cyclist is proud to have Bike Law as a trusted partner. If you find yourself in need of legal advice or assistance as it pertains to any cycling issue, log on to bikelaw.com. Back on The Outspoken Cyclist, and I am speaking with Brent Barber from the Bicycle Film Festival. When we left off, Brent was telling us how the festival artistically comes together. How did 2020 affect the festival, and what does 2021 and beyond look like for you?
Do we have to talk about 2020?
No. Okay, no, that was the answer.
I'm joking. So we had worked on this for like 14 months or 20 years. It was our 20th anniversary in June. We had our favorite band booked. We booked this beautiful church with a beautiful balcony. It's one of the old, I think it's the oldest church in Brooklyn and Brooklyn Heights. And we had all these other venues booked and sponsors. And, you know, I can't complain at all, honestly. Obviously, we didn't do our 20th anniversary. We're expecting 20,000 people. People have bought flights from all around the world, letting us know they're so excited to come. I saw South by Southwest cancel, and then I was like, okay, this is serious. And also, I'm half Italian, so I started hearing from my family and, you know, friends in Italy. And then I kind of felt something was going to happen. So we had to let it go. And then, honestly, I let the whole festival go because I didn't really know what was going on. And I thought, maybe we just don't do it anymore. Maybe that is it. Maybe this was a great ride. And, you know, I do something else, you know, like, so, but what happened was a lot of people started contacting, what are you guys going to do? What are you guys going to do? And then companies contacted us. How can we help? You know? And I thought, okay, let's do it. And my idea was just to do screenings. And honestly, I thought that because High School Film Festival has been, you know, we've had over a million attendees over the years. So there's at least a million people willing to pay or go to the Bicycle Film Festival. And I thought, well, we'll do online screenings. And I figured that out. United States is amazing. Within a month of COVID, there was like 2 to 3 businesses a day with platforms. We are the film festival platform. You know, they started, and I talked to them a few times, and, you know, like one was $35,000, one is $900. You know, it's like the Wild West of technology. And yeah, so we had a platform contact us, and they own a ticketing company in their platform, and they also own a couple newspapers on the West Coast. And the owner of the company met with me. He said, I love Bicycle Film Festival. What can we do to help? That was months ago, and we are learning every single day. We are now, I think we're about 30 cities in. And so what does that look like when I say 30 cities? Really, say like we go to Cleveland and we decide to do Cleveland. How are we going to get the word out in Cleveland? How are we going to get people to go? First off, let's rewind and say, how are we going to get a million people to come to Bicycle Film Festival online? How do we reach it? We're a small company. I thought, well, we should go city by city by city, because I don't want to do an event, put a lot of work into doing an event for 7 days online and really not be able to reach the people that I think that would appreciate it, at least the core people who come out to the festival every year, whatever city they may be in. It's just the internet, such a loud space. And why would you want to go to Bicycle Film Festival and there's Netflix, you know, Amazon and Apple and so on? So what we've done is that we partnered up. First, we went to the League of American Cyclists, consulted with them. What can we do to help? And we're working with advocacy organizations first. And then now we're working more with family-owned cinemas. And we are giving them a large portion of the ticket sales. And how do we get the word out? If we went to Cleveland, we would reach out to folks. We're not asking for monetary sponsorship. We're asking for barter. If you guys want to help us, we can help you by putting your logo on the screen roll and some other things. So it's really what's starting to happen is that we're working very hard, but we're building connections and friendships and community. And in fact, the logo roll, which is a lot of times, you don't want to say this in front of your corporate sponsor, a lot of times the logo roll is not the most fun part of the screening, but people have been recording them and people have been emailing us back. I was so happy to see all the logos that represent my community up on the Bicycle Film Festival screen.
Nice.
And especially now, because 98% of these companies are small businesses. So we're really hitting a groove where we're super happy with what we're doing. Now, we didn't wait for sponsors to do this. But usually we try to get, you know, a Puma or a Nike or, you know, a bank and so on to sponsor the Bicycle Film Festival, which is we're really grateful for, you know, and that's what kept us going. But this, we didn't wait around, you know, like we just did it. So this is the community coming together has helped us move this forward. And it's really, honestly, I don't like to use this lightly, these two words, it's life affirming. It's been a super positive experience during this time, which I'm quite reverent about, because I've seen it's been a tough time for a lot of people. And so I think that I'm happy and grateful that we're doing this wonderful, beautiful thing. And the films are super awesome too. So
can I ask a question?
Please, like, stop me.
I'm on your website under tickets.
And yes. It starts, the square that's open to me first is Washington, D.C., and then it goes through Philly and Sacramento and Boulder and Pittsburgh and Nashville and Chicago and on into the Shenandoah Valley. So yeah. Are each of these venues showing the same things?
Some of them are, not all. But yeah, the thing about it is that, say like someone wants to go see Shenandoah Valley for whatever reason.
Okay.
And they're in Philippines. People have done that. You know, they somehow found that out. The internet is such a tough place to get the word out. So we're just happy anybody goes to anything. But not a lot of people go to, I mean, our website traffic is through the roof right now. But like, people are staying focused. We're looking at the statistics, and a well over 90% of the folks are from the place. Like Philadelphia just finished, and Philadelphia, which was really awesome. We're grateful to the community. It's an amazing community in Philadelphia. Philadelphia was over 90%. Like, we keep it private, everybody, but people have to enter in their address for the ticketing system.
Right.
So we look through to see Philadelphia, 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 just to know if this is working and how that works. So if like somebody ends up in Shenandoah, great for them. There might be some people who are super Bicycle Film Festival fans who want to go see more than one screening. I would say just stick to one city, because we're releasing three programs, you know, per city. Not every city is going to get three programs, but you may not even hear about that, you know? So it's so hard to get the word out that folks may not even hear about that. Because we noticed that the traffic on the website, as I mentioned, is going through the roof. So we're going to start releasing like programs that are different. So if you just came across upon the website, you could see a program that didn't relate to the other cities, maybe. We have to figure that out. We have an abundance of great films, but putting the short film program forward, it's tough because we're really going with films that are story-based, you know, so anybody who joined up, like if you're really into BMX, as I mentioned, you would still enjoy this program, or road cycling. So like, it's not segregated in a way. So it's a kind of acrobat to program for the general public, where if you go to the physical event, you know that I want to go to the road cycling program. And then you could be a road cyclist and still go into the urban bike shorts, because that's a very popular program at the Bicycle Film Festival. And that's like music driven, racing through the streets, and bike messengers and BMXers and skateboarders. And it's really fun. People are cheering, but that may not be for everybody online. So I think what we did, I think it's been spot on. Kind of feedback we're getting from folks is super positive. We're learning as we go, and we're going to evolve. We have to have a big staff meeting. You know, we have like this staff to us right now means people who used to work for us too. You know, it's like we have this, it's amazing, generous kind of group of people. And so we have people on our team from around the world, and we're going to have a big meeting to decide like, what is the future? Like, when do we do a physical event? And we're talking, maybe we start in Asia because things are opening up quicker there. So we're talking in Southeast Asia, and we make more money. Not that obviously when, if you start a thing called Bicycle Film Festival, you're not all about the money, but we also need money. So we make more money in physical events, but we're super excited because we've neglected this kind of online area, like through social media, and hasn't been our priority. You know, we really love building community. And so this is like, you know, pushing us to get our act together in that way as a business, so to speak. And at the same time, it's turned into this thing that I think has been even more grassroots and more community oriented in a way. I'm super enthusiastic.
No kidding. Not obvious at all. Let me remind listeners, we've been speaking with Brent Barber. He is the founding director of Bicycle Film Festival. It's a very easy website, bicyclefilmfestival.com. I was just looking at it. There are some great cities, so you can get your city highlighted. Tickets are on a sliding scale basis, which I think is awesome, that if you can't afford a lot, you can buy a ticket and help support the film festival if you can afford more. And I take it you can actually pay more if you want, make a donation.
Yeah, I mean, we personally haven't done donations for us. You know, we're fine. I mean, we didn't have an income for a whole year.
Yeah, but, okay.
If someone wants to get involved and support us, we could really, it goes into hiring staff back and new people or what have you. But we're doing this as stakeholders, you know, like,
right.
We haven't done a city alone yet. What's really exciting is we did the Cinema Arts Center in Long Island, for example. Bicycle Film Festival has never, that I remember, ever been produced in a suburb. And we've had great feedback from doing the festival in the suburbs. We did Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Yeah, I appreciate you asking about the donation. It's something we thought about, but we didn't put as a priority.
Okay. Well, I think that people will go out and take a look. And I'm very curious to see how this year unfolds for you. So I'm going to ask you if I can get back to you and talk to you at the end of the Bicycle Film Festival season to see how it went and where you're going for 2022. Are you sticking with basically online for this year then? Are you thinking of anything like within the next 6 months live?
Well, the thing is that it's tempting. We get offered.
Sure it is.
We are offered a lot of money in Brazil and in some place in the United States to do physical events. I guess I'm pretty conservative. I said no.
Brazil set doesn't sound like a good idea right now.
Yeah. And I think that the people who wanted us to do that, one I did not know and one of the others I did, and they do well in life and they wanted to kind of push along their points of view with the Bicycle Film Festival.
Sure.
And I just want to be safe and I want to do the Bicycle Film Festival well and right. You have to plan these things out. Like I said, we organized for the 20th anniversary 14 months in advance. There is a little bit of confusion, but like I said, I think we're probably going to go. We have other, if you go to the site right now, there's probably like around 30 cities that we've scheduled or done already. And we have probably 70 more in us in the next few months,
okay,
at least. Also, we still haven't moved on to the next places. Like we're going to Ukraine, Italy, Brazil, Ecuador, all around Southeast Asia, Japan, South Africa. So we're keeping busy. And, you know, ultimately for us as an organization, I think this has, you know, been a big turning point and a very positive thing. We are working all the time. Like I said, like as we get stronger and if we start bringing in more corporate sponsorships, we can start hiring folks back and getting more and more staff because we cannot keep up with the demand. I don't mean that as in a braggart way.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, people love entertainment and people love expressing themselves and people love seeing other people doing what they love to do. So, I mean, it's a win-win-win. Well, Brent, thank you so much. This has been such an enlightening and exciting conversation. I hope maybe you'll consider Cleveland at some point. Pittsburgh's the closest I'm seeing. And
bring it on. Bring it on.
Bring it on. All right. Well, we'll talk again at the end of the season. How's that?
Okay.
I appreciate
it. I look forward to that.
Okay.
I look forward to it.
Bye.
Right. Ciao, ciao.
Brent Bauber is the founder and director of the Bicycle Film Festival. If you are interested in knowing more about the festival, want to watch a screening in your area or anywhere else that is listed on the menu, or want to find out how to bring the Bicycle Film Festival to your town, you can log on to bicyclefilmfestival.com. So let's take another short break, and when we come back, we'll speak with Jason Huntsman and Aaron Frank from Serial One. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU University Heights.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. When Harley-Davidson spun off its e-bike brand, Serial One, they came into the space without a legacy of companies like Specialized or Trek or Giant. Instead, they were able to reimagine the e-bike as a vehicle for the times, transportation, recreation, and fun. The bikes from Serial One look different and are offering some features that intrigue me. Hello to you both. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today. Hello, Jason. Hello, Aaron.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, I'd like to begin with your backgrounds, because Jason especially has a very kind of stellar storied background. And Aaron, I don't know much about you. So tell us about yourselves and identify who is speaking first, please.
Well, first, this is Jason. You know, my background is, you know, I don't come from, I would say, the traditional cycling world. My background has almost fully been in electrification, electric vehicles, and mobility. And so I've been on the startup side, on corporate venture side, both at Ford and Harley-Davidson, doing electric vehicles that could be electric cars, electric motorcycles, and now electric bicycles. But my passion has always mostly been around mobility, getting people to, in a more sustainable way, move from point A to point B, and then also enjoy that journey. And so I've always tried to do that with very passionate brands as well. And again, that's sort of my background, more in the business and the new venture space and launching businesses, either inside of corporations and then also outside of corporations as well.
And Aaron, tell me a little bit about you.
Sure. So I'm the brand director here at Serial One, and I've been working side by side with Jason to really build this new brand from the ground up. I am a dyed-in-the-wool bicyclist from back in the beginning. You know, I discovered cycling in high school. My first job was in the bicycle shop. My first passion was racing bicycles. I road raced. I raced mountain bikes. I spent a year riding from Canada to Costa Rica on two wheels once and just really loved the cycling lifestyle. I spent a lot of time professionally in the motorcycle industry. I worked for a motorcycle magazine for about 15 years as a test rider, moved over to Harley-Davidson, and really was excited to get involved with the eBicycle project because I think it was a really great way to combine my, you know, passion for two-wheeled adventure with solid product in a really exciting market right now that's really, really booming and growing at a really fast pace.
So I have a question that's off the grid of what I sent you, and that's about our new transportation secretary. Both of you seem to be in a space that would look at that and go, well, we finally might be getting somewhere. Jason, you talk about mobility. Aaron, you talk about electric bikes and bikes in general. Do you see an opportunity here for us, especially in the U.S., as getting more biking and walking because of the new transportation secretary?
No, I think it's a massive opportunity, and I'm really excited about it. You know, everyone looks to Europe and Amsterdam and things for biking and infrastructure, and you know, when we put it in here, and people recognize the benefit, you know, the benefits are just so long lasting, even beyond just getting people out of cars and air pollution and things. There's health benefits, there's quality of life benefits, and I'm just really excited for, you know, even if anything from small changes to massive changes, if we can make those happen.
That would be really cool.
Yeah,
go ahead, Aaron.
The only thing I'd add is it's not just an opportunity, it's a reality. I mean, I think that the way that people have been changing in the last year, changing the way that they move around in their world, especially with the pandemic and especially with urban areas where we see people, you know, trying to find safer, more sanitary ways to commute, alternatives to mass transit. And then, like Jason said, with people just looking for a way to get outside and entertain themselves in a fun, safe, and healthy way. You know, we see the transportation or the bicycling infrastructure expanding so quickly in so many cities right now. So I think that, you know, not only is it an opportunity, it's something that's actually finally happening here in America in a lot of places.
Yep.
And I think, you know, I'll just add one more thing.
Sure.
As we talk to customers, and we've talked to a lot of customers over the last few years, I mean, they're ready for this. People are really going to be on board with these types of infrastructure changes because they recognize the benefits.
Right. Let me reintroduce you to, we are speaking with Jason Huntsman and Aaron Frank from Serial One, and it's Serial with the number one. Back in November, Harley-Davidson spun off its e-bike division. Now, we knew they were getting into e-bikes, but now it's standalone, and clearly the company has a lot of faith in the e-bike market. So how do you think Serial One will fit into the e-bike market, given I won't say you're a late entry, but I would say that you're a new entry.
No, that's fair. Aaron, do you want to kind of talk about our
position? I can jump in on this. It's interesting, you know, because Harley-Davidson is a company that is so well-known in the two-wheeled space, and it's been really exciting to be a part of their expansion into the electrification of that two-wheeled space, not only with e-bicycles like the Serial One product, but with also with some other solutions that they've devised. But I think that, you know, we're working really hard to build this new brand, and I think we have a great opportunity to really create a different value proposition for cyclists. You know, we're positioned very much in that premium bicycle space, and a lot of our competition is legacy bicycle manufacturers. And a lot of times they have, you know, a history that's deeply rooted in sport or racing or kind of more of the competitive or athletic aspects of cycling. There's a really great opportunity, especially with e-bicycles, to bring in people who are not cyclists and people who don't have that predisposition to sport or athletics or competition. So I think there's a really great opportunity here to build a new brand that's really dedicated to that idea of fun, freedom, and adventure on two wheels. And that's something that's really central to Harley-Davidson's brand DNA, and that's something that we're really bringing forward in the creation of the Serial One brand, is creating, you know, a new brand that's really built around those fundamental ideas of fun, freedom, and adventure on two wheels.
So that's a really good point, that when we look at the legacy brands, as you call them, that they've always looked to competition as being their trickle-down ideas. So you start with the competitive high-end stuff and hope that the average person gets on a bike. But when you look at pricing today, especially in just the non-electric bikes, it's really through the roof. And so you have that problem of inclusion and equity, and all of that doesn't exist. Now, I'm not going to say your bikes are inexpensive, but I understand what you're trying to say. So what are some of the innovations that Serial One is bringing to the category? The bikes are really slick looking, or sleek looking. You can use either one. They're really kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in here, Jason, and you can add on in the end, but it's really important to realize that the Serial One product is not a modified or adapted standard bicycle. It's designed from the ground up to be an electric bicycle, and it's designed by an engineering team that has an incredible amount of experience building two-wheeled vehicles. So we used a lot of the same processes and plans that we use to build motorcycles. So you see a real emphasis on mass centralization. We designed our own custom battery. It's very compact and it's very low mounted, and it fits right over our mid-mounted motor, because we know from building motorcycles that mass centralization and keeping all of those heavy parts as low and as centered as possible is really key for maintaining really neutral handling. So you have a bike that handles really well. And then, you know, getting back to what I said before, we know that a lot of e-bicycle consumers are not traditional cyclists, and they just want a bike that's easy and fun to ride. So look at the build of the bikes, look at the belt drive instead of chain drive, look at the innovative solutions like the Onviolo automatic shifting hub, look at the integrated lighting and wiring, so you don't have to remember to clip on your lights or turn them on or charge them separately. The bike has been designed from the ground up to be extremely user-friendly and extremely transparent. We really wanted to build a bike that you can just get on and ride. You don't have to think about the bike at all. You don't have to worry about shifting gears or lubing your chain. You know, basically, you put air in the tires once every 6 or 8 weeks and you get on and ride the bike. So we've designed a bike, a product that really is easy for someone to jump on and immediately enjoy the ride.
So I have a question about your battery system and the way the bike works. Are they pedal assist? Is there a throttle? And how long will a charge last?
Yes. So there's no throttle. If you look at our bikes, we are going into the, I would call the premium space, with class one in the U.S. and a class three bike as well. So they are pedal assist, you know, mid-mounted motors. And, you know, the charge, obviously, if you look at our specs on our website, it depends on the terrain you're riding in and how you ride. But, you know, anywhere from 30 to 100 miles, depending on how much assist you want. Because like other e-bikes, you can move the up and down. I guess the one comment I would have is, you know, again, going back to what features are in our bike, you know, I always go back to the consumers and watching them on our demo rides for the first time. You know, a lot of people, and still in the U.S., it's their first electric bicycle experience that they're having. And for a novice consumer to jump on a bike, they don't have to worry about shifting. All they have to worry about is turning the bike on, selecting their assist, and then just pedaling and enjoying the ride. And everyone comes back with, you know, a smile on their face, and they're just, if the feeling is so incredible to them as they kind of feel like Superman as they're taking off on these bicycles. And I think that's who we're, you know, really going after, is a pure cyclist who's going to love our bikes because they're engineered to be a very, very capable bicycle. But at the same time, you know, we pull in non-cyclists who are just shopping for an e-bike experience, and we feel like we deliver that as well.
You talk about, you use the word city, but it's CTY on your bikes. Are these bikes capable of carrying any kind of load? If, say, I want to go to the grocery, or I want to, whatever, go get beer.
Yeah, I think absolutely. If you look, I mean, we have a couple different models. Three of our four models are equipped with racks front and rear, and those racks have a 10 kilogram capacity. So you're already set up to carry, you know, 22 pounds basically of gear with you. Or wait, I just did my math incorrectly. 44 pounds. 44 pounds of gear. So yeah, they do have some limited, some cargo carrying capacity, or and then whatever you can lash onto your body.
They're really, really slick looking bikes, and we'll give people a way to go look at them. So you're taking pre-orders. I noticed that. How are people getting test rides? You must have demos.
Yeah, we actually just launched a limited mobile demo program. We spent about 3 weeks down in Florida last month in January doing COVID-safe, one-on-one, individually scheduled demo opportunities, because obviously it's really important. People still don't have a full understanding of what an e-bicycle is until they actually ride it. So we had the opportunity last month for the first time to get customers on the bikes in some limited demo capacity there. We will be continuing that mobile demo experience over the next couple months, but very soon we will have demo bikes available at select Harley-Davidson dealers. So customers who are interested in riding the bikes can go to their nearby Harley-Davidson dealer and have a demo experience there.
So that is going to be the distribution network, is through regular Harley-Davidson dealers.
So I think there's two options, because we're trying to meet customers where they're at.
Okay.
For the customer who wants to a demo ride, they want to touch, feel, ride the bike, have that white glove experience that our dealers are, will provide. There's a demo fleet at, you know, more than 100 dealers in the U.S. that people can go ride the bikes on. Then they can purchase the bike right there from the dealer. You know, there's also another group of consumers who that may not be their way of purchase, and they may just want to purchase online directly to them. And so that option's there as well. You can purchase online and have the bike shipped directly to your home, or you have the option, if you don't want to do the small few assembly points that are required, you can pick it up at the dealer fully assembled as well.
Got it. I have a question about parts availability. So Harley-Davidson has a different system than the average quote-unquote bike shop, even the e-bike shop. It's been a really tough year, going on a year and a half now, where there was a rush to get into bicycling or pulling everything out of basements and garages and trying to get bikes on the road. How about parts and product? Are your bikes made here, or are they shipped in from overseas? How are you getting these bikes complete?
So like most of the industry, we will have plenty of bikes available and plenty of parts available. But, you know, what we're touting right now is, you know, go and try to buy a premium e-bike from a bike shop right now. It's tough. You're waiting a long time. And we have the capacity and the wherewithal to have bikes here in the spring. And we're excited about that, because they're available and we're selling them right now. And as we keep selling them, of course, there's going to be, you know, later and later delivery dates, but we have bikes available in the spring and summer right now. And you know, a lot of people don't. So we're excited to deliver to the customers.
That would be nice to be able to actually order something and get it. So the last thing I want to talk about, of course, is how can people find out more and learn about them? And then we're up here in the, you know, tundra of Northeast Ohio. So it's going to be a while before people can actually go test ride bicycles. But how would people find a demo? And are you going to take that mobile demo program on the road? Ha, no pun intended.
Yeah, we plan to continue mobile demo activities throughout the year, you know, continuing to do it in a safe and socially distant way as much as we can. The number one way to find out about our product is just to visit our website, and that's at serial1.com. And like you said before, that's S-E-R-I-A-L and the number 1.com. Complete description of our full product line, full tech specs and features there. We've also got some really active social media channels, some really great content on our Facebook and Instagram. You can find those just by searching Serial One.
Okay, we've been speaking with Jason Huntsman and Aaron Frank. They are with Serial One e-bikes, and they are a division. Are you no longer a division, or are you a division of Harley Davidson?
We are Serial One Cycle Company, powered by Harley Davidson, and so we still have quite a clear connection into Harley Davidson. We're still working with Harley Davidson. They sit on our board, and like I was going to share in the beginning. In order to win in this space, the decision was made to spin this company out on its own and let Harley Davidson focus completely on motorcycles, while Serial One can focus completely on the electric bicycle market.
Makes sense to me. Well, thank you so much for spending time talking with me today. We will look forward to seeing e-bikes, Serial One e-bikes, in Harley Davidson dealerships. I know we have a couple of really good ones here in Northeast Ohio. I hope you guys have a great rest of your winter and good luck selling season.
Thank you very much,
Diana. Thank you.
All right, you have a great day. My thanks to Jason and Aaron for joining me to chat about Serial One e-bikes. If you are interested in test riding one or learning more about the brand, you can log on to SerialOne.com. That's Serial, S-E-R-I-A-L, the number one, .com. My thanks to Brent Beber for joining me to talk about the Bicycle Film Festival. And my thanks to you for listening. You can always join the ongoing conversations on our Facebook page or leave a comment on our blog, outspokencyclist.com. Won't you please rate our show on your favorite podcast app, too? Next week, we'll meet Elizabeth McGowan. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who is also a cancer survivor and a long-distance cyclist. We'll also have a conversation with USA Cycling CEO Rob DeMartini in our ongoing discussions about the organization and the state of bicycle racing in the U.S. So I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, stay well, and remember, if you have a chance to go for a ride, I'm envious, but go anyway. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show, and we welcome your thoughts and comments. We'll be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and most other podcast apps and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.